So I'd like to play first this short 6-minute piece called Starry Night. Excerpt, please. It's very difficult to know where to start to talk of this piece, about this piece. One thing that struck me now, it's been a long time I didn't hear it, is I remember so much trying to take these planes down with my trumpet sounds very clearly when I was doing it. And each time I listened to it, like when you see a movie where you know that a murder is going to happen or the hero will get smashed, you see it again and again and again, and each time you know it's going to happen, but you still hope it won't. So it's really weird to feel almost 20 years later, I still want these planes to go down with these sounds. From there, I'd like to talk a lot about, or shortly, about several aspects of the piece. The artistic aspect, the journalistic one, maybe the personal one. Maybe first I can explain a little bit how it was recorded or what we've heard. So it was during the 2006 33 days war on Lebanon, where Israel was bombing the whole country and many times Beirut, where I lived. On the technical level, so what we're hearing is, of course, the trumpet played very close to the microphone. First, we hear actually the sound, the ambient sound and the wind sound. So I had a very bad microphone, a very bad recording device, and I never wanted to arrange this because way after releasing it, the first time we did an exhibition and the sound engineer said, we can clean it. I said, no, please don't. So it's really part of the whole moment to keep this really bad windy microphone sound. So the microphone is very close to the trumpet. I'm positioned on the balcony of my my flat in the fifth floor in Sennelfil, a suburb of Beirut. You hear, of course, the bombs, but you hear also almost constantly the planes, actually, this besides the wind, this very bassy sound coming and going are the planes above Beirut. What some people thought were sirens, and it was funny the first time somebody pointed out, like, why the sirens are started after the bombing? Like, what's wrong with you in Lebanon? So, so it's car alarms, actually. And these car alarms are started by, of course, the car moving with shaking with the vibration of the bombs. And there is a lonely, poor dog who is also very shaken by the bombs and who's participating to the whole thing. So it's good to say this because when I present the piece, I say Starry Night, a duo for trumpet and Israeli bombs. So I forgot not only the cars, but the car owners who wake up from their beds where they are sleeping and go shut the alarm off and go back, and then it gets on again, which tells you also how crazy it is. It took me time to realize, I always talk, I say, you can hear me playing, so you can hear somebody breathing, and you can hear the bombs, and you don't hear, but you know some people are dying when this is happening. And of course, I was very conscious about this while playing as a piece, and it felt really awkward, not to say bad, but really awkward to be playing music and knowing people are dying under this bomb, and in the same time having my musician or my artist brain on full on open and saying, okay, this is a very big sound here, maybe I should do something quieter to equilibrate the piece. So having this artistic kind of mindset was really very disturbing. somehow I couldn't shut it off. And fortunately, because it saved me, I always say if this piece saved anybody, it saved me in a very egoistic way. But so it took me a long time to realize it's not only me and the bombs, there are also these two guys with, or women for that matter, going and shutting their alarms off. And yeah, it took me years to realize this and to say, wow, they were scared for their cars to be stolen in this night. Like some mundane thing cannot be removed from the brain of people, like some capitalistic kind of thinking of being afraid for your alarm and your car. But also it shows you how for people in this kind of situation, life goes on, you know. Your car is still here, you don't want it to be stolen. I mean, you're not dead, the bomb is here and the car is there. Which brings us to another thing about the sound of the bomb and the sounds. And I grew up in civil war in Lebanon, so I was born in 75 with the civil war and lived until the end of it there. So my first 15 years were in civil war. And for my generation, it's really, our relation to the war is really a very peculiar one, for not having a better word. The sound of a bomb is something as natural as anything else. So when you're young, they tell you this is a table, this is the color red, this is the sound of a bomb. You just hear it since you're born, and then you live with it. And then you grow up and you understand what it's a bomb, but you're still a little boy and you have boys' games. And as a little boy, you cannot be scared of a bomb because boys are not scared, you know, it's for girls. So it takes a long time to start being scared. And I remember for me, it happened around 9 or 10 years old, where a bomb really exploded very close to the house where we're living. And I thought to myself, I could die now, or my parents could die, and that I am very scared. And I repressed directly this fear, being ashamed of myself to be scared. So I guess all my generation lived in this kind of thing. But on the other hand, we learned some things that I put in practice when I was recording the thing 20 years later, is how to react to silence and to sound. So funnily or sadly enough, silence is a very, very, very dangerous situation when you are in war. Like when you have silence, it's never innocent. Silence is never innocent. You are always asking, where will the first explosion happen? On which side of your house? Where will you go and hide? And then once the first one explodes, then you hide and then you're safe. So it's really, silent is always preparing. It's always an in-between situation. It's never something by itself. And the bombs themselves, like when we were young, we learned another game we used to do is to understand if this was a bomb exploding or if it was a deflagration of a bomb going to the other side. So a departure or arrival of a bomb. And we knew when you heard this whistling sound, this pew, it meant it was passing over you. So it's somebody else who will get it. And then these are games we used to do, but at the same time, very kind of survival thing with the ears. And it brings you to the sound of the bomb itself. So what was the most frightening, of course, the sound, but mostly the vibration it makes in your body. It's basses you've never heard, even in the best clubs in the world. It's really something that goes in all your body. But also instinctively you grow up with it, that if you can hear it and feel it, it means you're safe. It means you're still alive. So all this relation to the sound that got really buried very deep after the war, that once they told us when we were 15 years old, the war is over. It took us 5 years maybe to believe it, because all our lives they told us, yeah, the war is over, and it wasn't over. So it took maybe 5 years, and then we were teenagers, or I was, I mean, I can't talk for the others. And then we had I had other things in my life, other dreams, other ideas, etc. And then we forgot about it. And in 2006, it came back, and it was a very different situation. I was a father then, and And it was crazy and sad and interesting and so many other adjectives to realize that I had a nostalgia for this fear, for these sounds, for this situation, for this way of switching to survival mode, and the sense of emergency and of attachment to life that it gives you is something really, of course, it sounds very scary, but it is very scary, but it is something I grew up with, and it is kind of like Proust Madeleines. It's something that really brought me from 2006 to when I was 5 years old, for the better and the worse. So all this, I mean, from a journalistic point of view, because a very dear friend and fantastic musician, Peter Kuzak, called this piece sonic journalism, which it might be, but I wasn't thinking of myself as a journalist while recording it. So it has this thing, it has this artistic, because it's a piece of music at the end of the day, and it has this very personal and emotional link to it. So when I listen back, it really brings me back like any other piece of music, or more than any other piece of music I ever did. It brings me back to exactly this night of the 15th to the 16th of July, hearing the planes coming, taking the trumpet. Funnily enough, when we were young, when you hear bombs, you go to the safest place in the house. So you go to a room where there are no balconies. And then if it comes more and more closer, you go to the shelter eventually. In 2006, when I would hear the planes, I would take the mini disc and the trumpet and go to the balcony, which is the worst place to be, of course, but the best for the sound recording, which which tells you about, yeah, a lot about my situation back then. And one small detail also, I don't know if it's journalistic or artistic or personal, there is a kind of, like you really feel I'm playing in duo with these bombs, and sometimes I wait for it and sometimes I respond to it. So there is a cheat, actually a hack if you want, which is a very easy physical hack. So I'm on the balcony, I'm playing, I hear the planes, then I see the illumination of the bomb and I know in 1 second I will hear it. So I could really play with this, if I can use this word, in the sound. So sometimes I would stop, let the bomb happen and then answer it, and sometimes I'll decide to just keep playing, etc. But it was really a conscious thing, and I remember this moment specifically when it would happen, when I would know that the bomb will happen. And then, fortunately enough, I'm an improviser, so I really always was curious to how to answer to this. And this brings me to the end of all this description of the moment, which is, I feel very lucky to be an artist in this kind of situation, because of the capacity of, rather than becoming depressed and becoming out of work, actually, like everybody else in the city, in the country, and be just scared and not knowing what to do, etc. I was really in the most, or one of the most prolific artistic periods of my life, these 33 days, which is very sad, of course, but you have a sense of emergency and a sense of duty almost. I really felt I was on the front line, even though I was, again, saving nobody or helping nobody but myself doing this. But the idea of, rather than hearing the bombs and being scared, to make it clear, I'm no hero. I was shitting in my pants when I was doing this. I was like, you can imagine, yeah, he's great, he can fight this, etc. So I was shitting in my pants, but instead of shitting in my pants in the living room, I was doing it outside. And somehow having your brain actively responding. So having my artist brain on really helped instead of just being scared of really being in a reactive mode to this to this really huge fear, which I didn't have when I was young. When I was young, I would just put the fear away. Here, I was just fighting it somehow with it. So this is what it inspires me to say about it today.
Thank you, Mazen. It's maybe good to say that Mazen and Khalid collaborated in one of the most beautiful and inspiring sirens that we can encounter in the film. It's one of the opening contributions that I recommend for you to watch if you have